Hello, this is Gary with Helicopter Online Ground School. Welcome to our podcast. This is from a live training event that we did on loss of tail rotor effectiveness. The founder of Helicopter Online Ground School, Kenny Keller, invites you to visit his site, www.helicopterground.com, where we have four FAA-certified courses, private pilot, commercial pilot, instrument pilot, certified flight instructor pilot. If you'd like to join in on a live Tuesday where you have chat capability to ask questions, feel free to go to hogs.live to get signed up for that. Now enjoy your podcast.
Good.
Go ahead.
How we all doing? Welcome back from the holidays. First time live in what, 3 weeks, I think. Yeah, as Kenny mentioned, he's changed the studio around a little bit, got some new backgrounds, got some new equipment. There's only two of us today, so we're gonna do the best we can. Apparently our third party, we're not going to mention any names, Gary Cleveland, decided that he was gonna go to Hawaii instead of being here with us doing live training Tuesday. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about LTE, loss of tail rotor effectiveness. That's the more common name, I guess. Technically it's called unanticipated yaw. So with that said, you want to roll your video?
Yep, we'll roll it now.
Loss of tail rotor effectiveness, LTE. What is it? The Helicopter Flying Handbook tells us loss of tail rotor effectiveness, LTE, or an unanticipated yaw, is defined as an uncommanded, rapid yaw towards the advancing blade which does not subside of its own accord. It can result in the loss of the aircraft if left unchecked. It is very important for pilots to understand that LTE is caused by an aerodynamic interaction between the main rotor and tail rotor and not caused from a mechanical failure. Some helicopter types are more likely to encounter LTE due to the normal certification thrust produced by having a tail rotor that, although meeting certification standards, is not always able to produce the additional thrust demanded by the pilot. So first, let's cover the three winds that you have to be familiar with so that you don't get yourself in an LTE situation. First, we'll talk about main rotor disc interference. If you have a wind off the quartering left front, degrees 285 to 315 degrees, and winds at velocities of 10 to 30 knots from the left front cause the main rotor vortex to be blown into the tail rotor by the relative wind. This main rotor disc vortex causes the tail rotor to operate in an extremely turbulent environment. So try to visualize a great big huge donut of air around the outside of that rotor system, turbulent air being recirculated, and that wind coming on that angle is pushing all that dirty, turbulent air into that tail rotor. The second is weathercock stability, winds from 120 degrees to 240. In this region, the helicopter attempts to weather vane or weathercock its nose into the relative wind. Unless a resisting pedal input is made, the helicopter starts a slow, uncommanded turn either to the right or left depending upon the wind direction. If the pilot allows a right yaw to develop and the tail of the helicopter moves into this region, the yaw rate can accelerate rapidly. In order to avoid the onset of LTE in this downwind condition, it is imperative to maintain positive control of the yaw rate and devote full attention to flying the helicopter. The third one you need to be aware of is tail rotor vortex ring state. These are winds from 210 to 330 degrees. Winds within this region cause a tail rotor vortex ring state to develop. The result is a non-uniform, unsteady flow into the tail rotor. The vortex ring state causes tail rotor thrust variations which will result in yaw deviations. Rapid and continuous pedal movements are necessary to compensate for the rapid changes in tail rotor thrust when hovering in a left crosswind. Maintaining a precise heading in this region is difficult, but this characteristic presents no significant problem unless corrective action is delayed. However, high pedal workload, lack of concentration, and over-controlling can lead to LTE. So again, those three are main rotor disc interference, 285 to 315, weathercock stability, 120 to 240 degrees, and tail rotor vortex ring state, 210 to 330. So there are a number of contributing factors to this LTE that you need to be aware of. Number one, low and slow flight outside of ground effect. Number two, winds from plus or minus 15 degrees of the 10 o'clock position and possibly around the 5 o'clock position. Number three, tailwinds that may alter the onset of translational lift and translational thrust that induce high power demands and demand more anti-torque left pedal than the tail rotor can produce. Number four, low speed downwind turns. Number five, large changes of power at low air speeds. Number six, low speed flight in the proximity of physical obstructions that may alter a smooth airflow to both the main rotor and tail rotor. You need to be aware of LTE at altitude. And we know anytime we have high gross weight, high density altitude, that always is a contributing factor to anything bad that goes on in the helicopter. So of course, at higher density altitudes, higher altitudes, you're gonna be more susceptible to LTE. So there are some steps for reducing the onset of LTE. And these steps are one, maintain maximum power on rotor RPM, even if the main rotor RPM is allowed to decrease, the anti-torque thrust available is decreased proportionally. Number two, avoid tailwinds below airspeeds of 30 knots. If loss of translational lift occurs, it results in an increased power demand and additional anti-torque pressures. Avoid OGE operations and high power demand situations below airspeeds of 30 knots at low altitudes. Number four, be especially aware of wind direction and velocity when hovering in winds of about 8 to 12 knots. A loss of translational lift results in an unexpected high power demand and an increased anti-torque requirement. Number five, be alert to changing wind conditions which may be experienced when flying along ridge lines and around buildings. Be aware that if a considerable amount of left pedal is being maintained, a sufficient amount of left pedal may not be available to counteract an unanticipated right yaw. And number seven, execute slow turns to the right, which would limit the effects of rotating inertia, and the loading on the tail rotor to control yawing would be decreased. So the best thing to do is avoid these situations and not even get yourself into it. But let's say you did, for whatever reason, you got yourself into a LTE situation, then you need to know the recovery technique. If a sudden, unanticipated right yaw occurs, you need to apply forward cyclic control to increase speed. If altitude permits, reduce power. As recovery is affected, adjust controls for normal forward flight. A recovery path must always be planned, especially when terminating to an OGE hover, and execute immediately if an uncommanded right yaw is evident. Collective pitch reduction aids in arresting the yaw rate, but may cause an excessive rate of descent. Any large rapid increase in collective to prevent ground or obstacle contact may further increase the yaw rate and decrease rotor RPM. The decision to reduce collective must be based on the pilot's assessment of the altitude available for recovery. If the rotation cannot be stopped and ground contact is imminent, an auto-rotation may be the best course of action. Maintain full left pedal until the rotation stops, then adjust to maintain heading. So you can dig into the helicopter flying book a little deeper if you want to go even deeper than that. And for more information on LTE, you can go to Advisory Circular AC90-95, Unanticipated Right Yaw in Helicopters. So my thing, avoid those winds, know how to reduce the onset, use good pilot technique, and make sure you understand the recovery technique in the event you got into it.
You saw a video that Kenny produced a couple years ago on loss of tail rotor effectiveness. A couple of my notes that I've made as an instructor just to talk to you about. Technically, it's unanticipated yaw, but we commonly call it LTE, loss of tail rotor effectiveness. That's what everybody else calls it. If you want a very detailed reading about it, you can look at AC90-95. Tail rotor not producing adequate thrust to maintain directional control. It will not correct on its own. And if it is not corrected, you have a high risk of losing the aircraft. Important note, we're covering, this is loss of tail rotor effectiveness. This does not have anything to do with a mechanical issue. This is a aerodynamic issue from winds or certain azimuths or whatever. This is not talking about if your tail rotor transmission seizes or if your tail rotor breaks or even if you have a stuck pedal. Okay, those are three different issues that we can cover on a different broadcast. Also note, on a single rotor helicopter, so mainly every aircraft that we're probably gonna fly and all training helicopters, it will rotate to the right in a counterclockwise system. with airspeeds less than 30 knots. So, loss of tail rotor effectiveness in a single rotor aircraft with a counterclockwise system, you're going to rotate to the right with airspeeds less than 30 knots. This is something that I teach my students, and it's a simple little reminder or an aid, a memory aid for you that Kenny taught me when we first started. Unfortunately, as time goes on and we get younger and younger students, they're not going to remember this. But if everybody remembers the movie E.T., everybody know what I'm talking about? E.T. Here's how I remember it. E.T. Okay? Engine, tail rotor. If you lose your engine, your nose is going to go to the left. If you lose your tail rotor, your nose is going to go to the right. Okay? So E.T. It is funny. I taught that to a kid and he looked at me like I was crazy. He had no idea. The movie E.T. had no idea. All right. So are you ready to follow me with the camera?
Absolutely.
We're going to move over to my right, your left. And this is going to be a small little presentation that I'll have to be honest with you. I did not write on here. I'm not quite sure who did. Is this Kenny's handwriting, maybe?
I'm guilty.
Nice. So I'm going to cheat a little bit, and we're just going to read off of Kenny's notes here. So again, LTE, loss of tail rotor effectiveness, also known as unanticipated yaw, advisory circular 90-95. References are the Helicopter Flying Handbook. It's an uncommanded rapid yaw towards the advancing blade. Okay, so counterclockwise aircraft, advancing blade is on the right. So as I mentioned earlier, nose goes to the right. Okay, very important. This can result in the loss of the aircraft if left uncorrected. Okay, so as we're going to dig in here, you're going to loss of tail rotor effectiveness. We're going to spin to the right. If you do not correct that, there is a high probability that you're going to lose the aircraft, and more importantly, you're going to be injured or even lose your life. All right, so in LTE, when hovering or with airspeeds less than ETL, there are three wind azimuths that you must know. Now, as I teach my students, there really isn't, I don't think, if you really want to impress your examiner, you can get the exact degrees and tell him, or even the name of each one. But the main three, and I'll just tell you real quick, is a left quartering headwind, a direct crosswind, and a tailwind, okay? So the first one we're going to talk about, main rotor disc interference, okay? That is your left quartering headwind, and the degrees are 285 to 315. So if you're sitting in the aircraft, it's going to be your left quartering headwind. 285 to 315, left quartering headwind. Winds that are 10 to 30 knots. What's occurring is winds are coming across your rotor disc. The downwash or the vortices from your main rotor is being pushed into your tail rotor, and it's not, your tail rotor is not in clean air. It's not performing at 100% because of that dirty air that's being pushed into it. So again, this is called main rotor disc vortex interference, left quartering headwind. Again, if you want to impress your examiner on check ride day, you'll know the exact name and you'll know the degrees. But more importantly, no left quartering headwind. Number two, weathercock stability, basically weather vaning. Okay, that's the name of it, weathercock stability. The wind azimuth is 120 to 240. And this is your tailwind, okay? Know that if you're hovering around with, you know, 10 to 30 knots of wind or any type of wind, actually it's even lower than that, what's occurring is that the tail boom is trying to weather vane into the wind. So you're gonna have a lot of back and forth on your pedals. You're gonna have to be on top of your pedals as you're hovering around. So again, this is weathercock stability. The aircraft's trying to weather vane into the wind, and your degrees is 120 to 240. The third one we're gonna talk about is tail rotor vortex ring state. And what this is telling us is this is your left crosswind. It's from 210 to 310, okay? your tail rotor thrust. Remember this. This is something that our examiner that we use often has told us that a lot of people go in and not really knowing. Tail rotor thrust is toward the tail boom. Okay. So on this one, what is occurring is the left crosswind is pushing the vortices from the tail rotor back into the tail rotor. So again, it's not producing 100% thrust there. It's operating in dirty air, disturbed air. So again, the left crosswind, the wind is pushing the tail rotor vortices back into the tail rotor itself, and it's causing the tail rotor not to perform at 100%. Again, this is called tail rotor vortex ring state. It's from 210 to 310, but more importantly, just know it's from a left crosswind. The pilot workload is very high on this because you're, again, on top of your pedals, making sure that you're staying with that left crosswind and it's not pushing you around. Some contributing factors. Airflow and downdraft generated by the main rotor. The blade tip vortices. Turbulence and other phenomenon affecting airflow of the tail rotor. High power setting, slow forward airspeed, airflow relative to the helicopter, and any of these combinations thereof. So again, LTE is going to happen at less than ETL with winds anywhere, I think the book says 8 knots to 12 knots. So if you're hovering around and you're having 15 knot winds that day on a training day, you're very likely to get into LTE if you're not careful. You need to be aware of LTE. And other contributing factors, like I said, let me grab a piece of paper. The wind azimuth is the one. Gross weight, high gross weight, density altitude, low indicated airspeed, and then a power droop. If you get into it and all of a sudden you apply a lot of power, that's just gonna to aggravate the problem. Recovery technique. Apply forward cyclic to increase speed. Okay, so I just talked about if you got into LTE, it's because you're at a slow airspeed. So to get out of it, if your surroundings are, if you're allowed to, because of your surroundings, try to fly out of it. Increase your airspeed. You also want to, okay, Kenny mentions a recovery path must be always planned. Yep. Avoid rapid collective increase. That's what we're talking about. Auto rotation can be an option. So to recover, full left pedal, increase airspeed. Okay. If you can fly out of it, try to fly out of it. If altitude is permitting, you may have to actually enter the auto to break that cycle. Some things that you can do to reduce the onset of LTE. Maintain high operating RPM. Maintain that in the high green. Remember, your rotor RPM or your engine power is proportional to your tail rotor. So if you have low rotor RPM, or if you're high, or if you're operating in the low green, then that's just less authority for your tail rotor. Remember, they're directly proportional to each other. Avoid tailwinds below 30 knots of airspeed. That's just like you never see a helicopter take off with a tailwind. Avoid outer ground effect. Hover at high power below 30 knots. So, as I mentioned earlier, being outer ground effect, high gross weight, with a tailwind, you know, you're just asking for trouble there. Be aware of the hovering winds at 8 to 12 knots. Be aware of large left pedal. Yeah, if you're out there hovering and you've already got full left pedal to try to maintain directional control, you might have an issue there later on. Be alert to changing winds, meaning be alert to changing wind directions. And execute slow turns to the right. Think about it. If you're sitting there hovering, you already got a left crosswind and you're about ready to depart, and then you make your turn to the right, what just happened? Now your left crosswind became a tailwind and you're at slow speeds. We got a 5-minute video that we found. Looks like the NTSB just put out about, I think, early April. talking about this, and there is an actual NTSB employee who found himself in a LTE situation, and he talks about that.
All right, here we go.
The NTSB has investigated several accidents involving a loss of tail rotor effectiveness, or unanticipated yaw. This phenomenon is a critical, low-speed aerodynamic flight characteristic that causes a rapid, uncommanded yaw that will not subside on its own. If the yaw rate is not corrected, the helicopter will continue to spin and a loss of control will occur that could result in serious injury or death. All single-rotor helicopters are susceptible to this phenomenon and can occur in all modes of helicopter operations. Clint Johnson, chief of the Alaska Regional Office of the NTSB, has a personal story regarding LTE that he'd like to share.
Quite some time ago, about 20 years ago, I had an incident involving loss of tail rotor effectiveness that really changed my life. This accident, or near accident, involved a landing on a ridgeline that I lost tail rotor effectiveness. Circumstances were I was supporting a repeater site around the Anchorage area. My job that day was to go up to a 4,000 foot repeater site on top of a mountain. And initially I was scheduled to fly a 206L3, which has a much more higher gross weight allowance than a Jet Ranger. At the last moment the scheduling changed. I was now assigned to a Jet Ranger, and unfortunately that was probably one of our heavier Jet Rangers. This one was outfitted with pop-out floats. I still have the same load to take, the same technicians and their gear. Did a quick weight and balance, saw that I could do it legally and below gross weight, but very close to the gross weight of the helicopter, the maximum gross weight. We departed. We were already a little bit behind because of the schedule change, so there was a fair amount of self-induced pressure. You're wanting to do a good job. You're wanting to be able to get up there and get these guys to their site on time. So I didn't take all the normal precautions when we were coming into the landing site. The landing site is a very barren, windswept mountaintop where there are no trees, no grass, nothing to give you a feel of where exactly that wind direction is coming from. I didn't take that time because I was already behind. Again, that self-induced pressure was creeping in. While I was on approach to the landing site, you always want to leave yourself an out, whereas if you are not able to safely make that approach, you could dive off one side or either to the left or the right of that landing site. I came in, set the torque at 100%, had the closure rate coming into the landing site, and the closure rate kept creeping forward. I wasn't seeing a slowdown in the closure rate. At that point, torque stayed at 100%. We started falling through the approach and looked at the low rotor RPM. At that point, had full left deflection as far as the pedal position. I started my approach off to the right side of the landing site, and that's where basically everything started happening. I hit the stops on the left tail rotor pedal. This turned the nose of the machine continued to the right, and at that point we made probably four or five revolutions around, and it seemed like it was getting worse and worse and worse. Luckily, I was able to get away from the hill and start downhill, and I was able to actually lower the collective, which slowed the rotation down, and then was able to regain some airspeed, and then again regain control of the machine. But it was very, very close. At the end of the day, we probably made probably five or six revolutions. Don't really know exactly how many. The thing that really sticks in my mind is the noise of the machine, the transmission being drugged down, and kind of what I would classify as the death throes just before the accident happened. And luckily, we were able to regain control and promptly landed at the base of the mountain and checked the machine to see if it was okay. But it was a very enlightening moment for me. It changed my life as far as it taught me that nobody is immune. All those human factors lined up and almost caused an accident.
According to the FAA Rotorcraft Flying Handbook, to prevent unanticipated yaw in helicopters, Be aware of your surroundings and the wind direction at all times, especially in high workload areas, when flying along ridgelines and around buildings, and when hovering in winds of 8 to 12 knots. Avoid tailwinds below an airspeed of 30 knots. Avoid out-of-ground effect operations and high power demand situations below 30 knots. Maintain power-on rotor RPM. Monitor the amount of left anti-torque pedal being used. If insufficient pedal is available, you may not be able to counteract an unanticipated yaw. Conduct a thorough pre-flight planning assessment and stay below the helicopter's maximum allowable gross weight. The best way to prevent an uncommanded yaw is to never let it happen in the first place. Stay alert and don't get caught off guard.
There's an experienced NTSB investigator who himself got into a situation because of contributing factors. They talked about they changed his helicopter on him at the very end. Looking at his video, I pulled up some things here, and I just want to read a few things to you. During a 10-year period from 2004 to 2014, the NTSB investigated 55 accidents involving LTE. I'm just going to read you three synopses here of the case studies. They were all counterclockwise rotor blade systems. A pilot was making an approach to a hospital helipad into light wind at night when he chose to go around. The pilot lowered the helicopter's nose, added power, and raised the collective. The helicopter then entered a rapid, violent right spin. The pilot applied left anti-torque pedal and cyclic, but was unable to recover. The helicopter spun several times before impacting power lines and terrain. Just before the pilot added power to go around, the helicopter was traveling about 5 knots of ground speed. At such a low ground speed, the tail rotor is required to produce nearly 100% of directional control. The pilot likely did not account for the helicopter's low airspeed when he applied power to go around, which resulted in a sudden uncommanded right yaw due to LTE. So there you go. There's a hospital helipad. So obviously he's a commercial rated pilot flying EMS, and he got himself into it. Second one here is the pilot and two passengers were surveying deer with the helicopter about 50 to 100 feet above ground level with a 5 to 10 knot left crosswind and an indicated ground speed of 30 to 35 knots. As terrain began to rise, the pilot added power to clear a ridge. The pilot reported that when the helicopter was about 100 feet from the top of the ridge, the helicopter began to yaw to the right. He added power to clear the ridge line, which greatly increased the right yawing motion. The helicopter began spinning, crossed over the ridge line backward, and continued spinning before it contacted the ground and rolled over on its left side. A passenger reported that although the wind was about 10 knots when they started the survey, the wind speed increased when the helicopter reached the top of the ridge, and the pilot had to correct for it twice before the helicopter began spinning to the right. The helicopter was operating with the wind coming from the left and at a high power setting. The unanticipated right yaw and subsequent spinning of the helicopter are consistent with LTE. Number three, the pilot had planned a Part 91 sightseeing flight around New York City with two passengers. However, four passengers arrived for the flight. The pilot did not complete performance calculations before the accident flight, and the helicopter was in excess of maximum allowable gross weight at takeoff. Shortly after departure, while the helicopter was climbing to 60 feet above the water, the pilot failed to anticipate and correct for conditions, high gross weight, low indicated airspeed, and a right downwind turn, conducive to LTE, which resulted in LTE and uncontrolled spin. So there you go, folks. There's three examples of an LTE situation, one being a commercial pilot and a couple other ones, Part 91 sightseeing. There's three experiences, and they contribute some of this to this NTSB report. They're talking about the due to safety concerns, training for LTE is rarely done in an actual helicopter. Simulators allow pilots to practice recovery. However, the element of surprise and the rapid yaw that pilots may experience when the helicopter encounters LTE in flight is difficult to realistically achieve in some simulators. And there you go. How do you practice LTE? Now, when I teach students, we do simulated LTE recovery. And basically all that is for me is I take control of the pedals, I put the aircraft into a right pedal spin per se, and I have the student recover from it. It's probably about as close as you're going to get to the real life thing. Now, I can say that after experiencing a tail rotor failure, that the spin that I put the students in is much slower than a real spin to the right. LT, you got to be aware of it, and that's one of the main things of being a helicopter pilot, is you got to be aware of your wind azimuths. That's probably between that and settling with power are probably my two biggest concerns when training. Personal experience, and I think Kenny's going to share one also, is training with a student in an R-22. It was a pretty windy day there. That day, I think it was probably 15 knots, probably gusting to 18, 19. We were at the end of the training hour, so we were kind of light on fuel. But I was, you know, I'm 200 and some pounds, and my other guy was 200 and some pounds, so the aircraft's still kind of heavy, even with light fuel. We're hovering, taxiing up to the hangars, and right as we got close to the hangar, I think we hit one of those gusts coming up over the hangar, and it hit us just right. And all of a sudden, we're in a right. I think we're on the onset of LT. We didn't do a full revolution, but I was able to correct for it by flying out of it. But I just remember the wind came over. We started spinning to the right. My student actually said, "Help!" And I took controls, and I was able to fly out of it before we even came all the way around. But it happened pretty quick, and like I said, it was a windy day. It was in the summer, so it's already hot out for the high density altitude, and you know, it can happen just that quick. Kenny, you got something?
Yeah, I'll just share the picture I used for today to promote today's event was this helicopter that I used to fly, and this was during a boat race, and I thought this was good to show that, you know, here I'm low, I'm over the water, we're doing boat races, going real slow because the photographer, it was something for the Clear Channel, wanted to shoot the people along the shore, and you notice the wind sock, it looks like there's a little bit of tailwind behind me. That particular day, flying boat races, you know, I flew to the limits of my ability, pushing this thing, chasing boats, and then putting yourself in slow positions like that. Anytime you're, you know, especially in the summertime, anytime you're hot, heavy, more fuel than normal, more people on board than normal, going out and putting yourself in situations like that. You know, I've had lots of times where I was with a student and thought that it was, you know, it started to go and I've always caught it. The only time I've experienced it real life, I've always been able to avoid it, but in this exact same helicopter, one of the people I was flying with, one of the pilots, got into it above the city, out of ground effect hover, and we just flew out of it. But it happened quickly. When it started to spin, it happened way faster than what you would think. So I just wanted to throw that in there that, that picture makes me think of, you know, summertime, hot, heavy, more camera equipment, you know, big camera rig on the other side, inside mounted, more weight than normal. And that's what that makes me think of. And just it's okay.
This is where I really teach this and where it's really important, and this is what I go over with the students all the time, is LT, you want to know where that wind's coming from, because what do we do as helicopter pilots when we show up to the ramp at an airport or wherever, we want fuel. So this is where I really talk about it, is you're pulling up to the fuel pumps and, you know, say you need gas on your left side, but the wind's coming from that side. You really don't want to spin out of control and hit the fuel pumps. And you don't want to spin out of control and hit a hangar or whatever. But so this is where you really got to think about where your wind azimuths are coming from when you're hovering around the airport ramp or any other obstacles, really. So that was my training thought.
Depending on the aircraft you're flying, some are more susceptible. And what about Finistron versus conventional tail rotor designs? You know, I can't really say on that one. I mean, it clearly tells us in the book it can happen to any single rotored helicopter. Mm-hmm. So the book says it can happen to anything. As far as Finistron versus conventional, I don't know. I don't know enough about to make a quality.
I don't either.
A real qualified answer.
I have flown some Finistrons. Now I have had someone tell me that LTE is not a factor in Finistrons, but I do not. I'm not saying that that's the truth, or I'm not saying.
Well, I flew an EC-135 for 2.5 years, and they never said, "Oh, you guys don't have to worry about LTE." They never said that.
I would think wind azimuth is a wind azimuth, right?
I mean, right. They never
They in 2.5 years flying,
so
they never said, hey, don't worry about it, it doesn't happen to you.
So there you go.
So that would be my...
I would say if you're in a counterclockwise rotating system with a single rotor mast, I would be concerned with it.
Are NOTAR helicopters not affected by LTE? I would again say that they probably could be, because the book tells us any single rotor helicopter is susceptible. So that would be my answer to that one. I've never flown a NOTAR, or I haven't had any training in one. So.
I've never flown a NOTAR, nor have I... asked anybody about that, so I don't have any experience with that.
And then T. Gregory Berry has a question. I think this was for the video we showed. Shouldn't the input of full left pedal been a red flag for the pilot and cause him to approach from a different angle? Anytime you have a lot of left pedal, it's telling you got a problem. There's something going on. You should never have. You should know how much is in your normal reach, and if you're going more left pedal than normal, you know that you're starting to get into a situation. Would be my answer on that one.
Kind of touch base with that question along with the earlier question about different makes and models. I have experience in an Instrom F28A model, and we were talking about this earlier, and I think it's 205 horsepower, but the tail rotor blade back there, I swear, is about 2 inches in width. If you go to an F model, it's about that wide,
right?
But an A model is about that wide, and there's been times where we've got a lot of left pedal in there, and it's to the point almost where
you're wondering.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's not a rigging that needs to be, you know, maybe just touched on, or maybe the rigging's just not right, or maybe that thing just can't handle. Maybe with that, you better not be any type of left winds that are above 8 or 10 when you're hovering around, or be so aware of that. Because there's that thing takes a lot of left pedal.
Yep. Paul says being in a hurry creates a problem. Being in a hurry always creates a helicopter, or creates problems in a helicopter. Everything you should do, be safe, slow, methodical.
Anyway, that AC9095 talks about, you know, you've always taught me, and how I teach, you know, there's nothing fast about any of the maneuvers.
Nothing.
It's always nice, smooth, and, you know, and coordinated. So if you do a power increase real fast, you're going to have that power droop, and it's just going to make the problem worse.
In my first solo flight, I had a problem with LTE when I was coming in to set the helicopter down. I was applying full left pedal and was fighting the machine to turn left. So I went with the helicopter and gained speed and better control, and then set up into the wind to land. Sounds like you did the right thing. I mean, if you're feeling like you're pushing too much, then you probably need to fly away. It's probably not going to get any better slowing down. Is the recovery for LTE and total tail rotor failure the same? Negative. This is, we did one of our live training Tuesdays in the past. It was one of our first ones. I actually looked for this today, and I couldn't find it. And I don't know if we never edited it and put it back on YouTube or in the site. But our examiner asked us to make some videos, and he said, specifically, here's the problem. People are not understanding the difference between LTE and tail rotor failure, stuck pedals. And he said, and this, our examiner, he's been giving check rides for 25 years or more, and he said, I'm just telling you what I see as an examiner continually, applicants showing up and not being clear. And he said, it's a real problem. It's a real problem people are not understanding. So we have a past live training Tuesday where we kind of went over all the different ones, and we touched on LTE and we touched on those others. And I'll have to dig around and figure out where that's at. But that's why today we wanted to make it just LTE specifically. So yes, there's a big difference between LTE and a tail rotor failure. The tail rotor is not failed in LTE. There's nothing wrong with the tail rotor. It's the pilot's put himself in a bad position and didn't stay on top of the controls.
Remember, LTE, you can recover. If you recognize it, you can recover from it in a tail rotor failure. Remember, you've lost your thrust. Either the driver shaft broke, your tail rotor broke, the transmission seized, whatever. You've actually lost your thrust on that one. So, which, like I said earlier, we can do another live broadcast on that stuff. But, and then for stuck pedal, you still have the thrust back there, but you have no way of controlling the angle of the tail rotor. So that's something totally different. LTE, you can correct. So.
Yep. Jessica asked, also to recover, it is suggested to apply forward cyclic. If in mountainous terrain or an area with obstructions, one may also need to apply collective. So yeah, it depends on any given situation. Mm-hmm. You can fly out of it, but that's more of a, I'm not gonna say an advanced maneuver, but it's gonna be easier when you've had some experience and you've been able to kind of monkey with it, but somebody brand new, I think, is gonna have a harder time flying out of it than somebody who's been flying a while.
Well, and like you said, each situation is different. I mean, the book tells you the corrective action, full left pedal, while pushing the cyclic forward,
right.
Build air speed. That's what the book says.
Fly out of it if you can.
And if you have altitude, because LTE can actually happen at altitude, which I don't think we really talked about. But when you get up into the high gross weight and the high density altitude and the thinner air, you can actually, and slow air speeds, you can get into LTE. And it talks about you may have to actually enter an auto or even lower the collective and possibly enter an auto to get yourself out of it.
Yes.
That's if altitude permits. And just like this, most of the LTE situations are because you're hovering around. So you may not be able to apply forward speed or get that forward speed straight ahead or whatever. Hopefully you can, but.
Yeah, the one I mentioned earlier, we were 400 or 500 feet above the city, downtown over, you know, doing out of ground hover for the news station, doing video. And we got into it. All right, my wife is an RN and wants to train as a flight nurse. What can passengers do to prepare if this happens? Nothing that I can think of. I mean, it's up to the pilot to avoid this at all possible and never get into it and to start with. There's nothing really a passenger can do other than being strapped in the seat, you know, and properly strapped in like they should be is really the only thing that, yeah, and Becky says pray. Timing wise, probably good. 1:52. We like to keep these things in an hour, so we're wrapping it up. Lots of good questions, though. Max Flight Helicopter, thanks, guys. The rapid onset and the speed of the rotation is what can catch people out. Yes. It's good pilot technique from the start. And a lot of people, you know, they say, like I've had students that after they got their license, they go, I'm not doing all that crap Kenny makes me do. When you're maneuvering around the airport, going from here over to there, you know, stop, clear the tail, turn, stop, going slow. People think that's annoying. We do that on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we're always moving the aircraft slowly near the ground. We're being careful to not get into LTE because you're going to put the helicopter in those different winds. If you're on top of the controls and you're on top of the inputs and thinking about it, it's not going to happen. You're going to keep yourself out of it. It's just not being ready.
I mean, LTE is... think about your wind azimuths when you're out there flying and you're hovering around. I would really recommend you guys to read that AC 90-95, and it gets very detailed about LTE. And then look stuff up in the Rotorcraft Flying Handbook or the Helicopter Handbook. It explains it in there too. But like I said, when I train new pilots, my students, LTE and settling power, I hit those two concepts very hard. Those are the two, I think, one of the two biggest ones that will kill you.
Live Training Tuesday, hogs.live.com. To come back to sign up so that you get notifications or to come back any week, hogs.live.com. And there's links below for all of our products and services down below. Oh yeah, Helicopter Check Ride. You can get a free copy of a free PDF copy of my Amazon bestseller. First Amazon bestseller, Helicopter Check Ride. Remote Pilots, my second. Those links are down below to get a free copy. So we're going to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for commenting, being here, liking, subscribe to our channel. And we will see you in the next video.
Discover the number one helicopter training system on the web. Welcome to Helicopter Online Ground School. HelicopterGround.com